Good morning, everyone. I really appreciate, Dave, I appreciate that introduction. It is a true honor to be here at STFM. And I've known Dave for probably 3 or 4 years in the work that he's been doing. And he's such a passionate advocate of this organization. And so it was a real honor to be asked to speak. I think you're going to find a lot of what I'm going to say pretty surprising, especially coming from the CEO of MGMA, which is a 90-year-old organization. But I want to start by, you're right, I had to click it twice. I want to start by sharing with you the story of a doctor that I know. It's really the story that's at the root of everything I'm going to speak about today. My friend, he had two, you know, as I look in the audience and I see residents, I see teachers, I see academicians, I see private practice docs. This person started out much like all the rest of us. He had two major influences in his life. And since I appreciate the fact that there are several people in the audience that are around my age, first influence was Marcus Welby, MD. And generally, I speak to audiences that they have no idea who that is. But his second influence was his pediatrician. Now, he didn't just like his pediatrician. He idolized his pediatrician. And at the age of 8, he declared to the world he was going to be a physician. So he worked his butt off. He went to a good college, great university for medical school, and got a really wonderful residency. And for a while, his life was pretty good. But then something changed, something pretty profound. Buzzword bingo came along. HMO, PPO, ACA, PCMH, MIPS, if you will. And it didn't take long for my friend to get really bingo burnt out. And by the way, it doesn't take much to get him to vent about it in every excruciating detail. He's a great guy, a wonderful doctor, and between you and me, kind of a crybaby. He'll tell you his hours are too long and his time with his patients is too short. He'll complain about the quality metrics that he has to duplicate, triplicate, and even replicate just so he can get paid. And there are the labs that he has to review, the insurance companies he needs to call, prescriptions to refill, and all of that is just over his lunch hour. He now jokes that the little MD on the starch white jacket stands for miserable doctor. He got into medicine to make a difference. But today he spends 60 hours a week at his job and another 40 hours a week just trying to forget his job. And we all know and work with people like this right now, right? But I have a confession. Even though he's miserable, I still find him really attractive. So I have a confession to make to everyone here. Because Dallas is like Vegas, right, Dave? I sleep with him. Every night. Because this Dr. Downer, bless his heart, as they say here in Dallas, happens to be my husband, Michael. And Michael has generously allowed me to break both doctor-patient confidentiality as well as spousal privilege so I can air his dirty laundry. Mike will tell you he is the poster child of a generation of physicians who are burnt out and frankly feel utterly trapped. You know the expression, and if anyone's married here, you do know this expression. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Well, in healthcare, doctors aren't happy. As a good spouse, when my husband starts to complain, I really do my best to listen to him with great love. But these days, all that comes out of me is tough love. Because in my opinion, doctors are a big part of the problem. I say this as a doctor married to another doctor. We all know if you get a group of physicians together, they're much more invested in complaining about their life than actually sitting around talking about what they're going to do something about it. As we all know as healthcare professionals, any good self-help program begins by asking the question, of yourself. Do I have a problem? Ladies and gentlemen of STFM, we've got a problem. Physicians have spent the last 40 years complaining all of their power away. In our inability to work well with others, and our inability to collaborate, doctors have created the place that we live right now. The reason that I'm here is that I believe that physicians, practice executives, and patients can be the solution, because we have more power and control than we think. But that's only gonna happen if we stop whining and start leading. Now, believe me, I realize how far we've come from the days of the physician ideal of Marcus Welby. For starters, Marcus Welby did not graduate from medical school with over $300,000 worth of debt. In fact, when I was giving a speech in Mississippi, I had an MGMA member that came up to me and told me this story. My wife is a family practice doc. She went to Tulane University. She graduated with $370,000 worth of debt. She started practicing family medicine, which she loved. But we really couldn't afford to make the payments on her student loans. And now she works for a pharmaceutical company. You know what other problem Dr. Marcus Welby never had? He didn't have 2,500 patients and less than 15 minutes to see each one. Today, our docs spend over a quarter of their time filling out forms just so they can get paid for the work they do. And meanwhile, the perception is from providers is that the insurance companies are happier than pigs and you know what. Recently, a very loud, very angry physician stopped me at the conference that I was speaking to talk about the future of healthcare. I might use the term accosted, but we'll just say talked. Red-faced, he stormed up to me. Do you know that UnitedHealthcare recently revised their earnings up $2 billion? Do you realize when the ACA was signed into law in 2010, United was trading at $30 a share? Irate, Pokey. Do you know where it is today? $122 a share. Let me ask everyone in the audience, has your income quadrupled in the last 5 years? It's funny, I always get a laugh on that, and yet I'm very serious when I ask the question. My friend misses the point, though. It really isn't that insurers are doing well. The point that we're missing in all of this is that providers are an absent partner in the dialogue about the future of healthcare. Let me share with you a little more about how other physicians view the brave new world of healthcare. A recent article said, if you're brilliant, ambitious, gifted in science, you may consider becoming a doctor. If so, think twice. Today, 9 out of 10 physicians would not recommend going into medicine. Some actually call it their million-dollar mistake. More than a third say that they'll leave medicine in the next decade, including, by the way, my husband. Honestly, it's very much like a story of a friend of mine who's a practice executive. She started working for an endocrinologist in Oregon. So you may know this person, actually. And she basically, the doc hired her because even though this doc is overwhelmingly busy, you cannot get in to see this doc for months and months on end, she cannot keep staff in her office to save her life. So my friend was hired to come into the office, assess the issues, and fix what was going on. Everywhere my friend looked, the problem pointed to just one source, the physician. Oops. This isn't a bad doctor. In fact, her patients love her. She knows her medicine, but she is an absolute pariah to work for. She takes out all of her frustrations and problems on her staff. So armed with a professional assistant, my friend sits this doctor down and says, looking her straight in the eyes, the problem in this office is you. Guess how this doc reacted? The doc walked over to the desk, picked up a computer, walked over to the third floor plate glass window, and threw the computer out the window. My friend just stared at her. Why did you do that? I'm tired. I'm just so tired. Why does this matter to you in this audience today? Well, when you strip out all the rhetoric, without physicians seeing patients, there are no health systems, there are no academic medical centers, and there are no insurance companies. How did we get here? Oops. We got the Physicians Foundation answered this question, and here's what they recently said about healthcare reform. It is the physician who must accommodate the flood of patients newly insured through the ACA, who must adjust to inverted business models, who must adapt to payment systems turned upside down, who must implement healthcare technologies required by healthcare reform, and who must maintain the highest standard of care as they manage over 1.3 billion patient encounters per year. Is it really any wonder that 80% of physicians describe themselves as overextended? And is it really any wonder that up to 400 physicians a year that we know about take their own lives? What makes me crazy is when people tell me healthcare is changing. In fact, Dave and I work in a healthcare system, and that's like the mantra, that's our blessing before every meeting. Healthcare is changing. No, healthcare isn't changing. Healthcare has changed. And that's the reality that we need to deal with. And there is no use crying about it. The thing is, though, we doctors can blame Obamacare and the hassle of EHR mandates. We can blame a government for hopelessly complicating the practice of medicine. We can, and often do, blame insurance companies. But at the end of the day, we have no one to blame but ourselves. We are like the boxer who finds himself pummeled by an opponent. His trainer looks him in the eye and says, the problem is not what your competitor is doing to you. The problem is what you're not doing for yourself. The transformation of healthcare is just a symptom. The underlying cause and the affliction that we're battling is apathy. In the clinical setting, we doctors, even primary care doctors like myself, think we're gods. We make life and death decisions every day. But somehow, we refuse to make decisions about our own lives. A survey a few years ago found that 82% of physicians, and I quote, believe that they had little ability to change the healthcare system. Well, okay, not with that attitude. And we know when doctors feel disempowered, ultimately the net result is they disempower everybody else. Our apathy becomes everybody's albatross. So how did we get here? We got here as passengers, sulking in the back seat instead of taking the wheel. Our healthcare system became much more complex, and we did nothing. We pretended these changes weren't happening instead of figuring out how to lead the business of medical practice. We stuck our stethoscopes in our ears and our heads in the sand, and I'm here to say it does not have to be this way. So then people ask me, all right, doctor, then what's your prescription? Well, we need to do three things. First, we need to help your docs, since you're educators, embrace their inner MBA. And I want to be very specific here and say, no, I don't mean you need to go get an MBA. In fact, I'd even advise against it. Nor do I think that every doctor needs to learn how to make payroll for their organization. But we need to understand that every doctor that's in this room and every doctor that you're educating needs to embrace that they are running businesses, and every clinical decision they make has an economic impact. Now, the number one criticism I hear when I say this is, I don't want to talk about money. Talking about money is vulgar. Well, in fact, I know a doc who's a good friend of mine who says, Haley, I don't want to talk about money at all. I want to talk about patients. Well, I've got news for my friend. Everybody else is talking about your money. Physicians must embrace the fact that every decision, I'm going to repeat it because it's so important, every decision you make has an economic impact. And when you deny your role in that impact, you are denying your own economic power in this new world of healthcare. And medical practice, I'm going to say something utterly controversial, it is not enough to deliver high-touch, high-quality, patient-focused care. In 2015 and beyond, being a successful physician is every much as about being about the money and the economics of medical practice as it is about delivering the quality of care as a practitioner. And look, I get it. 20 years ago when I started my practice from scratch, I had to take out a business loan tied to my house to get it done. And when you put your house on the line, you learn pretty quickly, either I'm going to figure out how to do this successfully or I'm going to be homeless. So there's quite a bit of motivation tied to that. But what I figured out over the last 24 years in medicine is when you begin to embrace business 101, you see the places you are empowered. Let me give you a great example. When I worked for this physician group that Dave told you about, there was a pay-for-performance program floated by one of the largest insurers in the country to our group. If you join and join this pay-for-performance program, you could earn possibly an additional 4% enhancement to your agreed-upon rate. Every one of my peers, physicians, were signing up right and left. Well, before I signed up, I sat down and ran the numbers. My potential upside on this contract would have run about $50,000 additional to what I was being compensated. But I would actually have to bring in another staff member to adjudicate this program, which would have cost me $72,000. So I said no and saved myself $22,000. The problem is, most of us hear 4% increase and we just start to run in that direction. Either because we don't know any better or worse, we don't think we have a choice. And it's not just for pay-for-performance programs. Program after program, we give our power away rather than asking what the heck. After 24 years in medicine, I have a whole list of the insane things we do in our profession. I call it my what the heck list. Actually, in full disclosure, I don't call it my what the heck list, but for the purposes of talking to this audience, I call it my what the heck list. For example, why the heck do we let ourselves be chased around thousands of quality metrics? We know that the vast majority of the quality metrics that we're asked to document don't necessarily improve patient care and honestly may very well get in the way of patient care. And while I'm on this subject, let's talk about a couple other things on my what the heck list. I know that meaningful use is neither meaningful nor does it augment EMR use. I've come to the conclusion that all EMRs are crummy because crummy data going in gives you crummy data going out. I know that physician satisfaction measurements have no ability to separate out the true satisfaction a patient feels with their personal doctor versus their abject frustration of not being able to find a parking spot right before the appointment. I also know that no patient on the planet should be asked to fill out 14 different forms every single time they go to a doctor's office. It's a lot like this comedian that jokes, on one hand, medicine is so advanced we use robotic lasers to fix our eyes, and yet on the other hand, urology still starts with a finger in the butt. I mean, if we can create supercomputers and algorithms that turn videos of Grumpy Cat into big data, don't you think it's long past time that we create one form that asks your name and address one time. The reality is that we are the only ones that see these things because we deal with it every single day. We see the places and the situations that are the little things that aggregated turn into big things that screw it up for everybody. And we need to start talking about those things. And please, when you hear me talk, the one thing I want to get across today is I am not talking about incremental change. I am talking about a true revolution. My hope is for each and every one of you to start a revolution in your own organizations, which leads me to the second part of my prescription. Don't just think about your own practice or organization. Think about how we can influence healthcare together. And given the competitive nature of our business, let's be really honest. It's almost impossible for physicians to think of we instead of me. In many ways, healthcare in the 21st century has performed a massive bait and switch on us. All our careers, docs have been socialized to be independent. Since my husband declared at the age of 8 he wanted to be a doctor, he had to do better than everybody else. He had to do better than everyone else in high school to get into the college he wanted. He had to do better than everyone in college to get into the med school he wanted. He had to do better in med school to get the residency he wanted. And by the way, now that he's been a practicing physician for 24 years in his nice, large pediatric practice, he still has to do better than his peers in that office so he can make a living wage. Nowhere along the path did anyone say to Michael, you need to work well with your peers so we can do well as a profession. And we wonder why doctors have no capacity to band together. And as healthcare, we don't set the expectation for medical professionals to work together either. Our professional peers do the exact opposite. From the day they enter into their professions, attorneys, financial executives, and politicians recognize the only way to be effective and get things done is through collaboration. I'd argue that doctors gave away their power with their inability to collaborate, and that's why the perception is that insurance and hospitals have set the market. Oops. With every fiber of my being, I believe that it's time that providers enter into the healthcare arena as collaborative, equal partners, and not disempowered pawns. The good news is we're starting to see an influx of physicians who understand they have to do it differently. They're embracing the meaningful partnerships between themselves, their administrators, executives. As CEO of MGMA, I am focused on bringing us all together with physicians and practices to really start a movement. And I'm not suggesting total collaboration, or for that matter, total competition, but really just some healthy collaboration to spread best practices. Now, here comes the commercial part of my talk. The third and final part of my prescription is join MGMA. Now, for several of you in the audience, you already belong to MGMA or your organizations belong to MGMA. That sounds pretty gutsy, right? That I'm launching a pledge drive during my closing speech for your conference. But I want to be clear. This isn't about MGMA wanting your dues. This is about all of us getting what's due to us. My organization has supported medical practice, the business of medical practice, for 89 years. And to be completely transparent, I took over this organization because I believe that we have the power to truly transform healthcare, not just talk about it. I believe that we are a sleeping giant that's just starting to open our eyes. And when we do, when all 33,000 of our members and the 300,000 physicians that we touch join together in collaboration, well, that's how you do healthcare transformation. Many of you may know MGMA for compensation and reports and cost surveys. Really, our commitment for the future is that we want to be the Gallup of healthcare. We're working to give medical group practices the strength financially to do more than survive, but to really prosper. We're giving strength politically by mobilizing thousands of members who share their hopes and needs. And while we were talking about MACRA and MIPS, our organization is working hand in hand with multiple organizations on trying to make those tolerable for the people that are here in this room and really work for our patients and not just be another iteration of a failed CMS program. But it's only going to happen if we stop whining and start leading. If we have any hope at all of continuing to provide high-quality care to our patients, we need to start prioritizing the health of ourselves and our industry. We need to proudly acknowledge that we're running businesses and reclaim our economic power. We need to stop being aloof and start mobilizing as a true profession. We must step up, or nothing is going to change. And that change starts with each and every one of us. There's one last story I want to leave you with as a reminder of what this is really all about. During my third year of med school, I was making rounds with my team at a hospital, and we walk into the room of this patient, and he was sitting on the bed looking very small and very fragile. And my resident says, this is a 46-year-old man with multiple sclerosis, we're here, as he pulls out a spinal needle to do a spinal tap so we can assess how much protein is present in his fluid and decide how aggressively we're going to treat his disease. Doesn't acknowledge the patient. He bends the man, elbows to knees, takes the needle, cleans the area, shoves the needle in the gentleman's back. Still doesn't acknowledge the patient. And may I add, he misses. Looks over to the fourth year student and says, oh, I didn't get it, your turn. Still doesn't acknowledge the patient. The fourth year med student comes in, trembling ever so slightly, tries to fish the needle in, still doesn't get it, still doesn't acknowledge the patient. Finally, it's my turn. I walk out to the gentleman who's still bent in his cradle, in his position, and he turns around and says, Haley, is it gonna be okay? And I put my arm on his shoulder and I say, Dad, it's gonna be okay. Because that man was my dad. And that's when I knew. I knew in that moment of clarity, I knew that we had to do better and that we can do better for healthcare. Not just for my dad or your dad, but for everybody. We can make this about patients and not paperwork. We can adapt to the realities of a modern medical practice. And together, we can build a system that works for everybody. And when we do, I believe that that day, my husband will come home from work and say, I had a great day. And not because he was on a golf course. Let's make that miracle happen together. Thank you very much.